Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Lin Yang.
Have you tried getting a job lately? Did you apply online? We'll hear about finding a job becoming as much about your tech skills as your resume.
What are the top obstacles that millennials stumble over when looking for a job?
Then we'll hear about the Global Information Technology Report. Where does your country rank?
What is the future of fixed-wing airplanes?
We'll meet a man who made houses using a 3D printer.
And artists in Japan use radiation to make works of art.
All that and more on this Tuesday edition of Now. If you visited our homepage, www.voanews.com/now, you know that my lovely co-host, Lin Yang, came to VOA in 2009. Now, Lin, how did you find a job?
It's kind of like a long story. I learned my English through VOA.
Okay.
I used to turn into VOA and listen to it when I was studying college for 4 years.
Pats on the back for us.
I was listening to your voice, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, so when I came here for graduate study, I interned in D.C. Mm-hmm. after my first year of graduate program. And then I participate in a VOA tour. And then it's just so amazing that you're in the place that you used to listen to for 4 years.
That's got to be kind of freaky.
It is. So I start to pay attention to the website, and I saw a job posting online.
Okay.
And then I apply for it.
Now, see, you got your job online. When I came to work here, 25 years ago, I had to actually go to the state employment office. I was living down in Norfolk, Virginia at the time.
Wait, do you have to, like, knock on the doors?
Well, there's an office where they have what used to be called the Federal Jobs Digest, which was like this big, thick notebook. Mm-hmm. And now it's been replaced, of course, by a website. But you look through all the different jobs, and I saw one that said VOA.
Wow.
And so you had to fill out what was called a standard form 171, which I don't know if you still need to fill that out, or if you do, you do it online. And then you had to mail that in, and then you had to take a writing test, and you had to take a voice test.
Okay.
So they had to know if you could talk on the radio.
Yeah.
And then you had to wait.
Forever?
I waited for like a year and a month.
Okay.
Like 13 months, something like that.
I waited for 6 months before I could get this job.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, I did it kind of what you might call old school. But as we're about to find out, for a number of job seekers, finding a job can be as easy as just going online, like Lin did.
It used to be that looking for a job meant pounding the pavement, knocking on doors, and poring over help wanted ads. But that's changing thanks to the internet. A new report by Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce says for college graduates, looking for a job is getting easier. The report's lead author, Tony Carnevale, spoke to VOA, appropriately enough, online via Skype.
More than 80% of those jobs that exist at any point in time are available online.
At the height of the recession, when U.S. unemployment peaked at 10%, just a little more than 2 million jobs were being posted each month. But as the recovery takes hold, Carnevale says the job picture looks increasingly bright.
We're now at about 3.7 million job openings out there. By the time the recovery's done, we think we'll get to maybe 5 million job openings online.
Someone else.
That's great news for Georgetown junior Jamil Hamilton. Only once has he ever applied in person for a job at a shopping mall.
I think my generation, the idea of like going door to door, like knocking and saying like, hey, are you hiring? Like that doesn't exist anymore.
Those days are gone.
You can just go online.
Kim Dancy recently graduated with a master's degree in public policy. She found her dream job as an education policy researcher. But she says finding the perfect job online takes a lot of perseverance.
It can be really frustrating and it takes a long time, but that if you apply to enough positions and really do your homework, you will get somewhere.
The report's findings suggest careers in the so-called STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math, provide the greatest opportunities, with salaries that range between $30 to $45 an hour. But for maximum income and satisfaction, Professor Carnevale says workers must be prepared to move and change jobs at least every 5 years. Millar Sagan, VOA News, Washington.
So what about you? Is finding a job tough for you, or did you go online to get one?
You can let us know your story by sending an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
And we're on Facebook. Our address there is VOA Asia.
Don't forget, you can send us a tweet. Our address there is @NowVOAShow. So, David, you're a baby boomer, right?
Yes. I was born near, I guess I would call a baby fizzle. I was towards the end of the baby boom in 1962.
So when you went to look for a job, what were some of the things that you did?
Well, gosh, you type up resumes. And
you type up resumes.
Oh, yeah, we had to type them back then.
Okay.
You got to remember, the Apple, I'm old.
I thought your handwriting.
That's right. I had Brother Dominic write it with a feather. No. But the thing is, you actually typed it up, and you know, you had your resume, and you had, you know, references. You got reference letters.
Okay.
And, you know, you put on your best clothes, and you
went. Do you have to go physically, like, knock on doors?
Yeah, you physically had to actually go to the person who was offering the job. Like, I got a job at a medical school, and, you know, you have to go talk to the person.
Talk to people. Okay.
Yeah, and you hand them your resume. And you're sitting there trying not to look like you're about to swallow your tongue.
Yeah, whenever you see a job posting online, they will say, do not call, do not visit.
Right.
That's kind of like the thing they will put it there. They don't want you to go and knock on their doors.
Well, you know, the whole idea of face-to-face was important.
It is.
You know,
is
and
important.
There used to be the
interviews are important.
Interviews are important, and people would train you on how to master the interview.
Exactly. I was born in the 80s, and when I wanted to find a job, I basically just turned to the internet.
Really?
And try to look for anything like on there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I read an article recently that said people of your generation, millennials, people who were born in the 80s or early 90s, are having a tough time finding work because of the way that they're approaching the job search process, particularly the interview.
Wait, how so?
Well, you know, the thing is, this article said that millennials do such things as showing up in casual clothes, using their devices like their cell phone or their tablet or whatever during the interview, and taking their parents along.
What?
Mom, Dad,
now, that
I'm
is...
looking for a job. Can you, like, come with me?
That, you know, I think taking your parents is way... That's crazy. I've never seen anyone doing that. But I have to agree that showing up in casual clothes is a big problem.
Well, see, like I said, you get all knotted up. You know, I feel uncomfortable in a suit and tie.
If you want to do the job, you have to dress the part. Some people don't see that. They would think, I have the talent, and you should be able to see through what I'm dressing, how I dressed my talent, and it doesn't happen that way.
It doesn't actually happen that way. You know, the online application stuff might actually facilitate that. But
you still have to physically go in.
You still
for
have
interview.
To go there. Yeah.
Yes.
And see, the whole idea is the idea of conveying respect. Now, you're from China, and the idea of face. You know, if I'm going to a potential employer and he runs a multi-billion dollar company and he drives, you know, a fancy
Mercedes.
Car and he has nice suits and he has lots of people that answer to him.
Mm-hmm.
If I show up in like a tweed jacket and a polo shirt.
Exactly.
He's going to think, first of all, if I get to live. No. I'm only joking. But, you know, first of all, he's going to think, well, this guy doesn't respect me enough.
Exactly.
To dress like I dress.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think it never hurt to overdress in an interview. It shows your respect.
Now, the other thing, too, is the idea of being on your device.
I feel like, okay, for that, I have a different opinion, because I feel like if you have a tablet, for example, if you have an iPad during your interview,
yes.
If I have a video that I want to show them just on site,
yes.
I can just click it and show it to them. I feel like there's nothing wrong with them, but you should. Nothing wrong with that, but you should not be chatting with your friends.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's out of line.
You don't want to be like on Facebook going, sitting here with the job interview guy.
I bet some people would do that, and you should not, our audience.
Well, now, the thing is, if I were going to do that, and again, I'm old school, if I were going to do that, that link to that website would be on the resume I handed it.
It should be, yeah.
Yeah, and emoticons in the email going, thank you for the job.
That
doesn't look like you're going to be able to handle it.
But it's not all bad news, is it?
No, some younger people, this article said younger people, while they are more familiar with technology and they're more creative, they bring a new way of looking at a job, and they're more community involved. They're more likely to be team players because they'll bounce ideas off of other people.
Yeah, probably more creative too.
Yeah.
And try new technology.
So what about you? What do you think? You can let us know your opinion about younger people looking for a job by sending us an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
Or log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday, but we young right now. We got right now, so all get up right now. 'Cause all we got is right now.
Technology seems to invade all aspects of life in the 21st century.
From cell phones to tablets to alarm systems to cars, information technology powers the world.
But how effectively are countries using technology?
VOA's Adam Phillips visited the World Economic Forum and found out that it's not just whether you have technology, but how you use it that counts.
For several years, Western nations have dominated the top spots in the report's Networked Readiness Index. It compares nations according to their degree of internet connectivity and the ease of access by businesses, governments, and individuals. Finland, Singapore, Sweden, the Netherlands, and Norway occupied the first five spots, while Switzerland, the U.S., Hong Kong, Britain, and South Korea were next. Researchers also discovered that the gap between emerging and developed economies has widened, not narrowed, over the past year, even though access to technology like mobile phones and personal computers has vastly increased in the developing world over the same period. Shumitsu Dutta co-founded the report and co-edited this year's edition.
It's not just the question of whether you have mobile phone, that's great, you have mobile phone, but does the environment in the country, does the educational system in the country, does the business and political environment in the country support the use of technology to create new economic value?
Some countries maintained their position or moved up slightly in their relative ranking. But that simply isn't good enough in today's world of information technology, says Jeff Campbell of Cisco, a multinational corporation specializing in computer networking.
Everybody is improving their infrastructure. Everybody is improving their business utilization and their government utilization of technology. And the countries that aren't running fast are not going to keep up with everybody else. It's very real because this is about competitiveness for the future. This is about whether you're going to be able to compete not only in the IT industry, but also in everything, because IT is becoming pervasive.
Campbell points to the growing so-called Internet of Things, where computers connect and direct tools in physical, non-cyber domains.
Such as where you can use sensors in agriculture that will be in the fields that will tell you how much moisture there is in the soil, how much nitrogen, whether you need to fertilize, whether you need to water. In a world with less water, using the water resources in agriculture more efficiently will produce higher yields and lower costs and be better for the environment. That takes technology. Places that adopt that are going to be more efficient and more effective. It's going to improve their economy and change that world.
Campbell says this applies to the factory as well as the farm.
If you can use data and sensors about where your inventory is, where your orders are coming from, in order to automatically ensure that you have the right supplies to manufacture in the right ways, you're going to be more efficient and you're going to win in the marketplace globally.
The report also found disparities within regions and even within nations. This was also true within large economies like the U.S., where the economic disparity between people working in high-tech businesses and those in traditional jobs has generally widened. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
If you would like to read the full report, log on to our website, www.voanews.com/now.
Do you like to fly?
Actually, I have to say yes.
Really?
My dad is a flight engineer, so I grow up, basically, I always visit him when he was working.
Now, wait a minute. Your dad designs airplanes?
So in China, it's kind of like a... So he designs and also maintains it.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like a gray area in China. But
okay.
I used to visit, you know, I can go on the aircraft, and then he will show what part is...
Get out.
How does it work?
This is the stabilizer control system.
And once I was in the cockpit, just to witness the whole process of touching down, it was the most amazing experience. A
lot of buttons.
It's so nice.
A lot of buttons. You know, I'm not a real fan of flying in coach. I'm tall. I'm more than two meters
tall
for those in our audience. And I end up crammed into a seat invariably that is too small for me.
They're trying to put more seats there, just to let you know.
And the guy in front of me... wants to recline. Can you sit up, please, sir? Oh, whoa.
I'm reclining.
I know, but those are my knees.
You know, not only the seats are very narrow in coach.
Yeah.
And also now FAA is considering to allow people to use cell phone
right.
on the flight.
Right.
Considering, just imagine if
oh,
you
no.
are all cramped together.
No, I don't
in
wanna.
This cabin, and then someone's yelling on their cell phone.
No, no, no. Have you ever flown first class?
Yes.
Really?
Well, I mean,
to where?
I pull some strings.
Oh, a little string pulling.
Because
my father
works for
designed
the company.
This airplane. Yeah. I'll have my father turn your airline off. Well, you know, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration is called NASA, and it's usually associated with travel into space.
But as VOA's George Pudich found out, NASA scientists are testing ideas that could make flying quieter and better for the environment.
By 2030, NASA would like to see planes that burn 60 to 70% less fuel, pollute less, and are quieter than 2005 models. Scientists say achieving those goals calls for lightweight materials, better aerodynamics, new kind of fuels, and alternative aircraft configurations. In NASA's huge transonic dynamics wind tunnel, engineers are testing a new design of airplane wing made of a composite material that is considerably lighter than the industry standard, aluminum alloy. Senior aerospace engineer Robert C. Scott says in the future, wings will likely be made out of materials like this.
With advances in materials, advances in design analysis capability, and the need for higher efficiency, you end up with, you're driving yourself toward very lightweight designs.
One of those designs is the long truss-supported wing, says project scientist Richard Waltz.
That allows you to stiffen the wing, keep the wing thin, grow the span to reduce drag.
If someone decides to build one of those advanced configurations, they will be able to use the results of tests done by NASA. In another part of the center, researchers are testing a new way of manufacturing composite materials. Instead of aligning the fibers in straight, parallel lines, these fibers are molded around the points of heavy load, explains materials research engineer Karen Taminger.
And that allows the fibers to continue to carry load all the way around the corners instead of being interrupted if we cut that out of a straight aligned composite.
Taminger says new structural designs will allow manufacturers to reduce the weight of airplanes and make them more energy efficient. NASA researchers also want to reduce the pollution that comes out of airplane engines, says Faye Collier, who manages the Environmentally Responsible Aviation Project.
We want to take advantage of alternative fuels and the emergence of alternative fuels, and we want to design advanced combustors to minimize the output of what I call oxides of nitrogen.
To learn what's in the exhaust of an airplane burning a mixture of petroleum and alternative-based fuel, NASA scientists fly a second plane right behind the first one. Onboard sensors measure the percentage of pollutants contained in different fuel mixtures. Project scientist Richard Waltz says NASA is constantly looking for ways to revolutionize aviation.
We hope to find technologies that we can accelerate forward through the research, but other technologies, you know, they may not be possible for 20 or 30 years. They're just an idea.
In the meantime, he says, there are incremental improvements moving the aviation industry towards better, safer, and more efficient aircraft. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
David, you live in a house in Virginia, right?
Yes.
And your house is made of traditional materials like wood, concrete, and sidings?
Yes, it is. Now, do you live in a house or an apartment?
I live in a condo, an apartment, I guess.
Okay-do. But I understand that in China, a simple 100-square-meter apartment can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Well, you have no idea.
In cities like Shanghai and Beijing, just on 100 square meters is not huge.
I get very, very dizzy by looking at the price tag because I cannot count how many zeros are behind it.
Oh, man. Well, I saw an article about a Chinese Chinese firm that could help solve that problem. They're making houses with a 3D printer.
Get out. Yeah. No way.
Yeah. Now, my first reaction was like, oh, yeah, right. Okay. What is this? Because, you know,
that's,
a 3D printer.
Weird.
Well, I've seen 3D printer make things out of plastic. But
they
were
saying you can make use 3D printers to make organs to transplant, right?
I don't know.
It's still very...
That's still, yeah, you have to actually use living cells to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this company called Winsun New Materials can build a house for less than $5,000.
The article says the walls are made of concrete and recycled construction materials, and it's printed on a giant 3D printer.
Now, the walls and the structure are printed in layers, and then other materials like the roof, the windows, and the doors. Of course, you can't print glass. At least, I don't think you can. They come from non-printed materials, so there is actually some aftermarket stuff.
Okay. The chairman of Winsun, Ma Yihe, says that the materials are filtered and make a solid, eco-friendly house.
Now, according to Mr. Ma, the company can make up to 10 houses in one day. Ma said he was inspired to use a 3D printer to make houses after seeing that the technology had been used to make such things as airplanes and automobiles.
And according to Mr. Ma, the houses will be cheaper and more accessible to ordinary people in large cities like Beijing and Shanghai.
So what do you think? Would you live in a 3D printed house? You can let us know by sending an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
Or you can log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
It's been more than 3 years since a devastating earthquake and tsunami led to a nuclear accident at Japan's Fukushima power plant.
The radiation from that plant continues to contaminate the environment, but one man used art to raise awareness of the dangers.
Japanese artist Masamichi Kagaya teamed with University of Tokyo scientist Satoshi Mori to make art prints based on the radiation coming from common items.
The prints were shown last month in an exhibit entitled Image of Radiation from Fukushima.
Mori made autoradiographs, or visual representation of radiation given off by objects such as scissors, a dead snake, or gardening glove, to show how the energy still pollutes the area.
The images look like charcoal or pencil drawings. The darker the image, the more radiation is being given off.
Exhibit curator Kagaya said he hopes the exhibit will be used for school books and will help people learn about the dangers of radioactive fallout.
The artist has also paid a price for his work. Traveling to within 10 kilometers of the Fukushima Daiichi power plant meant exposing himself to 10 times the recommended dosage of radiation.
No, that is real sacrifice.
That's dedication to your art.
That is dedication.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Is using this kind of art a good way to teach people about the dangers of a nuclear radiation?
Let us know by sending an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
Or log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
We'd love to hear your questions or comments. You can email us by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
Or you can log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Now.
Until then, I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Lin Yang.
Thanks for listening.